Okay, so we're diving into Bitcoin today, but with a twist. We're not just talking about buying and holding. We're exploring the idea of outperforming Bitcoin by investing in the ecosystem itself.
Yeah, it's a fascinating concept.
It's like instead of betting on a single horse in a race, we're looking at the entire racetrack, the stables, the jockey equipment, everything that benefits when that horse crosses the finish line.
What's really interesting is that this isn't about saying Bitcoin's a bad investment or anything. It's about leverage. How can you amplify potential returns by investing in the infrastructure that's driving Bitcoin's growth? That's the core idea presented in Outperforming Bitcoin by John Arnold at 1031. And they would know a thing or two about this. They're a firm completely dedicated to the Bitcoin ecosystem.
So they're all in on Bitcoin, but they're playing a different game. They actually highlight holding Bitcoin as foundational, which I thought was interesting.
Absolutely. They make a great comparison to the early internet. Imagine going back in time and investing in the company that made all the routers connecting everyone.
I see where you're going with this. Not as exciting as the newest website, but crucial for the whole thing to even work.
Exactly. That's the kind of thinking they're applying to Bitcoin.
Instead of investing in the gold rush, they're investing in the picks and shovels.
Yeah.
I like it. So how do you actually put that into practice? How does that translate to investment strategies within the Bitcoin world?
So 1031 argues that by strategically investing in sectors like Bitcoin mining payment solutions, consumer apps built on blockchain technology, you could actually see returns that outperform Bitcoin itself.
Because as Bitcoin grows, so do those industries. It's a bet on the whole ecosystem, not just one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But how do you pick the winners in that space? What's their secret sauce?
One really important concept for them is what they call expedited returns. Basically, they're looking for companies that are on track for super rapid growth, the kind that get acquired by bigger companies really quickly.
So you're saying it's like getting a sneak peek into Bitcoin's future value, but cashing in on it today.
Exactly. They call it capitalizing on the Bitcoin premium.
Bitcoin premium.
Yeah. Imagine a company that's developed a really cutting-edge payment solution that uses Bitcoin. As Bitcoin becomes more popular, a larger company, let's say a global payment processor, they might see more value in just buying that smaller company instead of trying to build that technology themselves.
Ah, so the Bitcoin premium is that extra value baked in because it operates within the Bitcoin ecosystem. Makes sense. But we have to address the elephant in the room here. Bitcoin is famously volatile. How does 1031 deal with that?
They actually address this directly. While it's true that Bitcoin's price can be a roller coaster, 1031 focuses on the steady upward trend of Bitcoin adoption.
Meaning.
More businesses are using it, more individuals are incorporating it, and entire industries are finding ways to integrate Bitcoin.
So even if the price is dipping, the underlying technology is becoming more ingrained.
That's the idea. They specifically point to the growing number of companies that are starting to use Bitcoin for real-world transactions. So those companies that are providing essential Bitcoin infrastructure are more likely to thrive, even during a dip. Their success isn't directly tied to what the price of Bitcoin is doing day to day. It's about the adoption of the tech itself.
Okay, so they're not just watching the price ticker, they're looking at the bigger picture of how Bitcoin is actually being used. But how do they actually turn that into investment decisions? How do they pick companies that fit into that model?
Well, one thing that I think is really different about them is their focus on a 10-year time frame. Now, I know that might not sound groundbreaking.
Bitcoin is a long game, right? Decades even.
Exactly. But 1031 is fund managers. They're aiming for superior returns within that decade. One way they try to do this is by looking for companies that generate positive cash flow in Bitcoin.
Okay, hold on. Sats flows. What is that?
Sats flows. So sats are short for Satoshis, the smallest unit of Bitcoin.
Yep.
So imagine a company, let's say a payment processor. They're not only facilitating transactions, but they're also earning fees in Bitcoin. They're not just benefiting from Bitcoin's growth, they're actually accumulating more Bitcoin through their own operations.
So they're like Bitcoin miners, but with a more diversified business model.
Yeah. And this actually ties into their whole concept of historical parallels.
Which is.
They argue that investing in the best Bitcoin companies is a lot like investing in the companies that were providing infrastructure and technology to other booming industries.
Mike.
Think about the oil and gas boom. Investing in the companies that were providing the tools and services to those industries, they saw returns that were directly tied to the success of oil and gas.
So they're not just riding the wave, they're providing the surfboards.
Okay.
Got it. But this all hinges on them being able to actually pick the companies that become those key players, right?
Exactly. And that's where their experience and their network within the Bitcoin community, I think, becomes so valuable. They've been in this space for a while now, investing in these key players early on.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives them this access and credibility that a newer, less specialized firm just wouldn't have.
Yeah, it's all about who you know. And more importantly, who knows you?
Absolutely. They even talk about how that lack of competition lets them have more influence within the companies they back. It's not just about giving them money. It's about being a partner, helping these companies navigate the Bitcoin world.
Okay, so less competition, more influence, potential for those quick returns through acquisitions. This is starting to sound pretty good. But what about the volatility? Bitcoin is known for being all over the place. How do they handle that risk?
It's the million-dollar question, right? They argue that their whole approach to investing actually offers some built-in protection, even when the price of Bitcoin drops.
Okay, how so?
Remember when we were talking about the difference between Bitcoin adoption and Bitcoin price?
Right, like even if the price drops more and more businesses and people are still using Bitcoin for their day-to-day.
Exactly. So while the price of Bitcoin might be volatile, that trend of adoption tends to be more stable.
So people are still using and needing these Bitcoin services even when the price dips.
Think about it. Imagine you're relying on a service to send money internationally using Bitcoin. You're probably not going to stop using that service just because Bitcoin had a bad week.
Right.
The need is still there.
Yeah, the service is still useful regardless of the price fluctuations.
And that's what 1031 is counting on. They're betting that even when the market is down, the companies they invest in that provide essential services like payment processing or infrastructure, they're going to keep growing. Their value isn't just tied to the price of Bitcoin.
It's about how useful it is, not just speculation.
Exactly. And this is where it gets even more interesting. They say that this separation of adoption from price actually creates more opportunities for them to outperform.
More opportunities.
Yeah. Think back to those historical parallels we were talking about. Oil and gas, pharmaceuticals. Those essential companies in those industries. They often did really well during times of uncertainty, even downturns, because their value became even more important.
Because everyone was looking for an advantage, a way to save money or be more efficient.
Exactly. And 1031 thinks the same thing will happen in the Bitcoin world.
So they're saying that while everyone else is freaking out about the price of Bitcoin, they're calmly buying up companies that will benefit in the long run.
That's the strategy. They're playing the long game here, focusing on the fundamentals and not getting caught up in all the hype.
But that's all theoretical, right? Have they actually seen this work?
Well, they say that they're already seeing evidence of it in their portfolio. They're claiming that several of their larger investments have actually gone up in value significantly, even when Bitcoin's price has been flat or even down.
Really? So they're outperforming Bitcoin without even having those big exits yet?
That's what they're saying. Now, it is important to note that these are internal valuations. They haven't actually cashed out on these investments yet, so we'll have to wait and see if this outperformance holds up in the long run.
It's like paper gains versus actual profits.
Exactly. But they say these early indicators show their thesis is playing out like they thought. It's still early, but they're finding those companies that are providing essential services, and those companies are growing, even when Bitcoin isn't.
Okay, so there's some early validation there, but can they keep this up? Can they keep outperforming over the long haul?
That's the big question, isn't it? That's what we'll dig into next. They have some interesting arguments for why they believe this strategy isn't just viable. It's one of the best ways to really take advantage of this whole Bitcoin revolution.
So we've talked about their strategy, the logic behind it. We've even seen some early signs that it might be working. But let's get down to it. What kind of returns are we actually talking about here?
This is where it gets really interesting. 1031 actually modeled out different scenarios to show how this could all play out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For a hypothetical $100 billion fund over 10 years.
So they're putting their money where their mouth is, at least on paper.
Right. They took into account a bunch of factors. The number of successful exits, the timing of those exits, and the average return for each scenario.
So it's not just, trust us, this is going to work. They're showing their work. I like it.
Exactly. And here's the interesting part. Even in their most conservative models, where there are fewer successful exits and the returns are lower, the fund still outperforms Bitcoin by a lot.
Wow. So even if they have some misses along the way, the overall portfolio still comes out ahead. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
How does one of those scenarios actually work?
Let's look at their baseline model. They call it Scenario A. They assume a 16% hit rate for the fund.
Meaning?
It means that for every company they invest in, only about 1 in 6 need to be a home run.
That doesn't seem too far-fetched, especially if they're the experts in this market.
Exactly. They're not trying to hit it out of the park every time. And even with that really reasonable hit rate, their model shows the fund would still generate returns that are way better than just holding Bitcoin, even if Bitcoin does really well over those 10 years.
So that's a pretty powerful illustration of their strategy in action. But they don't stop there, do they? There are more scenarios.
Oh, yeah. They have scenario B, which is a little rosier. They assume a 24% hit rate there. So about 1 in 4 investments becomes a big winner.
And what happens there?
The returns are even more impressive, even if those big wins take a bit longer to actually happen.
So even if it takes a while for their thesis to fully pan out, the payoff could be huge. What about their most conservative projection?
That's scenario C in that one. They only modeled 2 major exits over the entire 10 years. And even then, the fund either keeps pace with or beats most traditional investments.
So no matter how you slice it, their model shows this approach has the potential to outperform Bitcoin, and sometimes by a mile. But it's still a high conviction strategy, right? It's not without risk.
You're absolutely right. 1031 is very upfront about the fact that this isn't a sure thing. This is venture capital we're talking about. And venture capital always has risks.
Startups fail. Sometimes the market changes. Sometimes things just don't work out.
Exactly. But they seem pretty confident that the potential rewards outweigh those risks, especially for investors who understand the Bitcoin space and are optimistic about its future.
Okay, so maybe not for your grandma's retirement fund, but for the right investor, this could be a game changer.
That's a great way to put it. And they argue that they're in a unique position to make this work. They have the experience, they have the network, they really get this space. They were early to the game, and that head start can be huge in a market that's changing as quickly as Bitcoin.
We've gone over a lot today, everything from the big picture idea to the actual strategies they're using and the potential returns. What's the one thing our listeners should take away from this? What do we want them thinking about after they finish listening?
I think the biggest thing to remember is that there's more than one way to invest in Bitcoin. You could buy and hold and hope the price goes up. Or you can invest in the companies that are building the future of Bitcoin, the companies providing those essential services. Those are only going to become more valuable as Bitcoin becomes more popular.
Like we said, investing in the picks and shovels, not the gold rush.
Exactly. And while it's never a sure thing, 1031 makes a pretty good argument that this might be the best way to take advantage of the whole Bitcoin revolution.
So the next time you hear someone talking about Bitcoin, don't just think about the price. Think about the possibilities, the companies that are being built on top of it, because that might be where the real opportunity is. This has been a fascinating deep dive. It's definitely given me a lot to think about. Thanks for joining us.